Good day and welcome to the full year financial results for Ooredoo Group conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Andreas Goldau. Please go ahead, sir.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Mahavan bikum fi hadhihi mukalama li munakashat natijat hasana al-maliya al-fain wa sitatash. Hello and welcome to Ooredoo's financial results call. My name is Andreas Goldau, and on behalf of the Investor Relations team, I thank you for joining this session. As part of our discussion, I'm pleased to introduce Hans Kuropatwa, who is leading our strategy team, and Ajay Bakri, our Chief Financial Officer. We start with an overview of the group results and our strategy. The presentation will be available on our website at ooredoo.com. Before we begin, a few necessary disclaimer points if you refer to slide number 2. In the course of today's discussion, we may make some forward-looking statements. These will be based on the information available to us as of today, and so you should not assume that in future we will continue to hold these views. As such, we do not commit to notify you if our views change. We therefore refer you to our public filings for some factors that may cause forward-looking statements to differ from actual future events or results. So to begin, I now hand over to Ajay.
Thanks, Andreas, and thanks to everyone for joining today's call. Ooredoo has delivered a solid set of results for the full year 2016, showing good signs of financial and operational progress across the majority of our operations. I'm pleased to say that we're making good progress against our strategy. We had healthy levels of customer growth across the board, with an increase in the customer base of 19%, now reaching almost 140 million. The significant investments in the speed and reach of our network attracted more and more customers. The highlight for the year has been our significant progress in network deployment and upgrades. We have been the first operator to launch 4G services in several of our markets, which is a clear competitive advantage and attraction point for our customers. Financially, Ooredoo generated solid figures. Excluding foreign exchange impact, the revenue would have been up 2% across the business instead of the reported 1%. We have good revenue growth in the majority of our markets. In terms of EBITDA, we exceeded our guidance for the year and delivered a strong EBITDA of 13 billion riyals and an improved EBITDA margin of 41%, testament to a cost optimization program across the business, as well as cost synergies derived from group sourcing. We enhanced our data leadership position further. Data accounts for 40% of the total group revenue and reached 13 billion riyals. Data remains the core aspect of our strategy, and we continue to see good growth opportunities across our business as well we roll out faster networks to more and more customers. Keeping our future in mind, an important development of last year, which I'd like to mention, is that we have completed one of the region's first 5G mobile trials and tested various applications which can support solutions related to the Internet of Things. Moving on to slide number 5. This gives you information about Ooredoo's revenue and EBITDA performance. We performed well across several of our operations and delivered growth in revenue and EBITDA, reflecting the progress that has been made across the group. Once again, our operation in Qatar demonstrated its significant position within the group, and it remains our core revenue generator. This revenue was up 1% to almost 33 billion riyals. In local currency terms, we have seen growth across all our key markets, with the exception of Asiacell in Iraq. Thanks to improvements in operational performance, EBITDA margin increased to 41%, and the business delivered a healthy EBITDA of 13 billion riyals. Let's move to slide 6. Mainly driven by growth in revenues, as well as the operational efficiency programs, We have seen profitability increase across our operations in Qatar, Oman, Indonesia, and Maldives. At a group level specifically, we have made significant progress in driving forward our efficiency program. Group net profit increased by 4% to reach 2.2 billion riyals for the year. Net debt stabilized at 28 billion, and our net debt to EBITDA ratio improved to 2 times, which is right in the middle of our long-term guidance of between 1.5 and 2.5 times. On slide 7, let's take a look at free cash flow and CapEx. A significant increase from previous years, our free cash flow more than doubled to reach 5 billion riyals. Consequently, our CapEx to revenue ratio decreased to 18% for the full year 2016 compared to 27% for the same period in 2015. This is largely due to the lower levels of CapEx on a year-to-year basis, as we have now largely finished the heavy lifting of network investments over the past few years. CapEx was reducing also through cost synergies derived from our global sourcing program and group economies of scale. As you can see on slide 8, we have seen a further reduction in total group debt, which now stands at 41 billion riyals. Group debt remains mainly at a corporate level, largely in Qatar, followed by Indonesia, and then a smaller percentage allocated to the remaining opcos. Debt at the opco level is kept primarily in local currency. Next slide, please. I'm pleased to report that we have well balanced our debt profile. We continue to manage our debt profile conservatively, and you can see how we have balanced our long-term debt financing in terms of instruments and timings. For this year, there are no upcoming debt maturities. The next due bond is our Sukuk, maturing in December 2018. On slide 10, you can see that we have substantially strengthened our customer base across the majority of our operations to reach almost 138 million customers, up 19% compared to 2015. Our smart marketing strategies and network quality and upgrades continue to support our growth. Majority of new customers were added in Myanmar and Indonesia. Moving on to slide 11. We are pleased to have exceeded our estimates for EBITDA growth, which currently is 3% higher than in 2015 and above the given guidance of -3% to 0%. This reflects the significant efforts put by the team to increase business profitability and efficiency. CapEx is even below guidance levels and 32% lower than 2015. As mentioned earlier, we are seeing lower levels of CapEx on a year-to-year basis because we have now largely finished heavy lifting network investment of the past few years and also the benefits of our improved sourcing strategy. For 2017 guidance, for revenue, we expect a -1% to 2% movement, EBITDA 0% to positive 3%, and CapEx level between 5.5 to 6.5 billion riyals. Let me hand over to Hans now.
Thank you, Ajay. I'd just like then to recap again on our overall group strategy, our lead strategy, and make one or two comments about our progress against that over the year. So you will recall that our lead strategy has three pillars, the first being market leader with a goal of gaining growth ahead of the market, and I can say we've made some very meaningful progress in that regard this year. That's balanced by our need to make a significant return on investments we've made and have an efficient business model, which is the pillar on the right. And again, I'm happy to report that we've made improvements both in our EBITDA margin and in our CapEx to sales ratio. In fact, our CapEx to sales ratio went down from 27% in 2015 to 18% this year for the reasons that Ajay previously just described. That all comes together with our overall objective of improving value creation, which is free cash flow from the business. And again, I'm pleased to report that that has gone up over 3.5 times, or nearly 3.5 times, between 2015 and 2016. If I then focus on one or two of the strategic priorities and how we've progressed against those, on data monetization, data continues to be a growing part of our business. Data revenues increased from 37% in 2015 to 40% in 2016, so continuing on the important growth path. In terms of our network, we continue to have a strategy of having an excellent network quality to offer to our customers. We now have 4G launched in 8 out of our 10 markets around the world. And in Qatar, we have one of the top 5 globally performing fiber networks in terms of fiber penetration. We've been working very hard on our brand. The brand is launched in 8 out of our 10 markets. The brand performance is measured by independent third parties, and in those measurements we've come out as a top 10 MENA brand. We're the third telco brand in the region, and the brand value has increased by over 2 times between 2014 and 2016, so significant improvements in performance of our brand. And on top of that, we are collecting license fees from our operating companies. In terms of efficiencies, I've highlighted the two notable elements in terms of improvement in our CapEx to sales margin by 9 percentage points and our improvement of our EBITDA margin. So again, reflecting the hard work that's gone on throughout the business on improving efficiencies. I think those are the two points that I would like to have, wanted to highlight, so I'll hand back to Ajay.
Thank you, Hans. Let's go through the business in a bit more detail and moving on to slide number 15, Qatar. As you can see, we produced positive results in our home market in Qatar, underpinned by our data experience, leadership, and progress in delivering services. Ooredoo Qatar now boasts a total of 3.5 million customers. An important development last year was the launch of the 4K home entertainment services, which saw strong demand from customers. Overall, the business generated a solid financial performance and maintained market leadership. Q3 to Q4, ARPU decline was there due to seasonality, which is offset by higher handset sales revenue, which is a low-margin business. EBITDA margin is lower quarter on quarter because of the handset sales, and also in Q3, we had certain one-off reversals and lower level of marketing activity. Moving on to the next slide, Indonesia. Indosat Ooredoo had a spectacular year with double-digit growth in revenue and EBITDA and improvement in EBITDA margin, which was supported by strong growth in the cellular business. Customer base was up almost 23% in 2016, stimulated by several initiatives which saw Ooredoo deliver digitally enhanced shops, offer more functionality and increased data connectivity for the entire country. As a result, data revenue is contributing to more than 40% of cellular revenue. 4G network rollout is progressing very well, and they're covering well over 100 cities in Indonesia and counting. Q3 to Q4, revenue and margin have been fairly stable. Moving on to the next slide, Iraq. We are seeing a slight improvement in the security situation in Iraq, with some areas liberated. As a result, we have increased customer numbers by 11% and now reach 12 million. We're maintaining our revenue market leadership position and believe Asiacell is in a good position to capture market value once the situation improves. Due to strict cost control and efficiency program, the impact of the reduced revenue on EBITDA has been softened, as evident from higher EBITDA margins. Q3 to Q4 revenue and EBITDA have been fairly stable. Moving on to the next slide. Oman delivered another strong set of financial results. We have seen healthy growth in revenue, EBITDA, and customer numbers. During the year, we further expanded our 4G network to cover half of the Omani population and generated more than 50% of revenue from data. Q3 to Q4, revenue is slightly lower. EBITDA margin moved from 55 to 50% due to year-end provisions and the timing of marketing spend. A normalized margin would be more in the range of 52 53 range. Moving on to the next slide, Kuwait. Although we operate in a highly competitive market, revenue increased from mobile business as well as through fast telco consolidation and acquisition we made during the year. Customers were up 3% year-on-year to reach 2.3 million. Q3 to Q4, revenue and EBITDA margin slightly improved. Moving on to the next slide, Algeria. You can see that our financial performance continued to be impacted by a negative FX trend with a 7% decline in revenue in real terms. In local currency terms, revenue was slightly up year-on-year. Operationally, we were in a strong position. In October, the region of Algeria started the commercial 4G rollout. This will further strengthen our position in the market as a data leader. Customer numbers are 6% up year-on-year. Margins were impacted by competitive dynamics as well as handset subsidies. Q3 to Q4, revenue is lower due to seasonality. The Q3 revenue is higher generally because of the Eid holidays during that period. EBITDA margin was impacted by timing of marketing spend, high spend in Q4, and handset subsidies, as well as certain costs of handsets related to previous quarter. A normalized EBITDA margin would be more in the range of 35%. Moving on to the next slide. Tunisia has managed to maintain its market leadership despite the challenges in the operating environment. The country is still suffering from a slowdown in tourism and depreciation of the Tunisian dinar. In local currency terms, we increased revenue and EBITDA. We're looking to offset the negative impact from the economy and currency depreciation by focusing on cost-saving initiatives and driving forward our marketing plans. The Tunisian regulator ranked us first in terms of quality in both voice and data. Data is a key contributor to our revenue. We therefore further expanded our 4G network. We also increased our customer base, now up 6% year-on-year. Q3 to Q4, revenue was down due to seasonality, similar to Algeria. EBITDA margin was maintained quarter to quarter. Moving on to the next slide, Myanmar. Myanmar delivered strong results with a healthy revenue growth of 38% compared to 2015. Growth was driven by our data business and further 3G network rollout. We also launched the 4G network, which was the first for the Myanmar market and which helped us offset an increasingly intense competition. We reduced EBITDA loss significantly, now almost reaching a break-even point. Operationally, we continue to grow market share, and we are now covering the vast majority of the population. We are in a good position to capture growth in the coming quarters. Quarter 3 to quarter 4, revenue grew in local currency terms by 2%. EBITDA margins were stable, now almost reaching break-even points. That finishes my presentation on individual markets. I'd like to highlight one point, which is below the EBITDA level. Some significant movements are there below the EBITDA level which compensate each other. So I wanted to proactively address some of these movements before we get into question answers. As far as depreciation and amortization is considered at a group level, it's about 400 million negative impact as a result of our investments in the network as well as getting the frequencies for the launch of 4G services. This negative impact has been offset almost completely by positive foreign exchange movement, where we had huge losses last year, covering Indonesia and Myanmar, whereas this year the losses are much reduced. The second point which is compensated is the lower impairment levels this year. You'll see in the financial that impairments compared to last year are lower by 140 million. This is more or less compensated by lower other income line item. The other income line item covers gain from sale of investments last year. And this year, the gain on sale was lower. Plus, there was some other income due to reversal of certain provisions for liabilities from previous years. These were old provisions, not relating to the last couple of years, but even before that, which were reassessed and reversed. So these, so big picture, depreciation, amortization, negative impact offset by lower foreign exchange losses, lower impairment charges, more or less offset by lower miscellaneous income. With that, I'll hand it back to Andreas.
Thank you very much, Ajay and Hans. And now we can move on to the Q&A part. Emma, would you please be so kind to explain to the participants how to ask questions?
Certainly. Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will take our first question now from Muneeza Hassan from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks a lot for the presentation. I just had a quick question on your Asian asset base, specifically those that are still not branded as OIDU. What is your commitment to those assets? Are you going to continue to own them? Or are you going to eventually start evaluating some options for exit from those assets?
Well, look, of course, we're always keeping our asset portfolio in review. We've got nothing planned at the moment to change the position of any of our Asian assets. But that's something that we will keep under review, and of course, if we're in a position to say something, we will in due course.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question from Karim Riyad from EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for the call. A couple of questions from my side. Firstly, on the quarterly margins in Qatar and Oman, they've contracted significantly quarter and quarter. Can you please clarify why it contracted that much? And secondly, on the branding fees you get from subsidiaries, how much do the subsidiaries pay to the group as a branding fee? And does it vary by subsidiary? Thank you.
As far as the margins are concerned, we mentioned that quarter three to quarter four, the margin decline in Qatar was due to low margin sale of handsets during the quarter. And in Q3, there were one-off reversals of expenses and also lower marketing activity. So if you talk about how much from there, about half the decline. In case of Qatar, the margin declined about 8%. About 4% of that comes from sale of handsets, which is increasing the revenue, but it's a low margin business. So overall, it compensates revenue but gives you a lower margin. Another about 2% comes from marketing activity, which was more done in Q4 compared to Q3. And in Q3 also there were some one-off reversals, which were one-off in nature, and about 2% comes from there. So in an overall basis, this explains the 8% variation for Qatar. For Oman.
Oman.
Oman also grew from 55 to 50%. There are some year-end provisions which have come in quarter four, and also the marketing activity has increased in this quarter. So if you have excluded the one-off provisions, the margin would be close to 50 to 53%. Last quarter was unusually high. So 50 to 53 would be more sustainable level of margin for Oman.
And what were these provisions related to?
These are only true provisions end of the year. So sometimes provisions are assessed related to staff liability or some OPEX related provisions. But nothing which is unusual there.
Okay, thank you. And on the branding fees?
Branding fees, there is no fixed fee. There are many very low single digit percentages at best. And it's not a standard fee, which is the same across the articles, depending on what type of support is provided. It's generally cost based fees for all articles.
Okay, thank you, AJ.
Thank you. We'll now go to our next question from Dilya Ibragimova from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hello, hi. Thank you very much for taking my questions. I had a couple of questions, please. First, on your outlook on EBITDA growth, could you give us a bit more on what drives this potentially bullish outlook for, especially at the upper range? Is where do you expect things to perhaps improve from the current level? Of course, Indonesia is growing really well, and what would be the other drivers? Is it Myanmar or if you could give a bit more color on the outlook in for EBITDA would be great. And second question is on Myanmar 1800 megahertz spectrum that may come up for sale this year. Do you have any visibility on the pricing for the spectrum, please? Thank you. Or maybe expectations.
Fair enough. Let me take the first one and I'll give it to Hans for the spectrum. The EBITDA growth comes across through various aspects that we're doing at the group level, as well as at OPCO level for cost optimization. So on a big picture basis, each OPCO has plans to get efficiency built into their plans. A big movement is also expected to come from Myanmar as well, which is being a negative EBITDA margin until this year, reaching, as you can see in quarter three and four, almost break even. So as it spills into a positive territory, which we are hoping will happen in 2017, that will also add to improved margins.
Thank you.
And on the 1800 spectrum, the process is still being finally decided on by the authorities there. So we don't have a clear view yet on the likely value of the spectrum or the likely price of the spectrum.
But for us, what is the best way to look at it? Is it going to be priced relative peer countries in the region or past spectrum sales?
Well, I mean, it's a little hard for us to give you a view on that, because obviously that's something that we've given some input on. The regulator is obviously considering all the inputs he's had and coming to the conclusion. That hasn't been reached yet. Clearly, from a point of view of your modelling, you can take some reasonable assessments from what's gone on in the region and what's gone on in market, but I'm not really able to give you much more guidance than that.
Okay, understand. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Deval Kakadia from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. I just have one quick question. How do you expect competitive dynamics to turn out going ahead in some of your key markets? And if you could throw some light on pricing trends in your key markets. Thank you.
Okay, if you talk about competitive dynamics, I think all markets are quite competitive. As the industry competitor as well, as you appreciate, we're not expecting any dramatic changes in 2017 as far as competition is concerned. It's business as usual for us. on a big picture basis, Oman, as you're aware, is looking at a third operator. A process for that is ongoing right now. We believe the bids are in, but the government has not still taken a decision. That will be in public domain for everyone to know at the right time. In case of Myanmar, they've awarded a fourth license as well. So on a big picture basis, these are the two markets where new licenses will impact competitive dynamics. The other markets, it will be business as usual, but still quite competitive.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Mark Hamoud from Deutsche Bank.
Good afternoon, gents. Three questions on my end. First off, on the short-term debt upcoming for this year, $3.36 billion, do you intend to repay this debt or refinance it? I also noticed in the financials that you took an impairment of trade receivables of 212 million Qatar riyal, which is about 10% of the total net profit. And last year it was 176 million. So I was wondering what kind of receivables require such impairments. And the last question is more, I mean, you get this question maybe every call. But given the improvement in free cash flow generation, which is now above 5 billion, and assuming you pay all the short-term debt and based on the dividend of 1.1 billion that you paid or you're about to pay for 2016, it still gives you some good room to improve either in dividends or do something else with this cash. So with the question is, with improving free cash flow, what's going to be the strategy for the cash deployment? Because CapEx guidance is flat, and we don't have visibility on dividends. So if you can maybe help us understanding what you're going to do with this cash.
Okay, as far as the short-term debt is concerned, all this debt is in our opcos. At a group level, we have no debt refinancing needs. At opcos, very often the debt is generally refinanced across the opcos, and if there is surplus cash generation, they could repay part of it. But we are expecting substantial refinancing at the opco levels. The impairment of trade receivables is spread across opcos. In a couple of opcos, certain business-to-business impairments were there in terms of receivables, which are old receivables. That too, in some cases, there were some billing-related issues which were cleared up, which are old disputed amounts. So I would classify that as not business as usual cleanup. It was more a cleanup of old outstanding receivables, which happened to happen at the same time in a couple of opcos. Free cash flow, you're right, there's 5 billion of free cash flow. You see that the net debt reduction is not equal to that. If you talk about a reduction and how well this cash is going, about 20% has gone to net debt reduction. About 40% of that has gone to purchase of, say, licenses, especially in Myanmar, Tunisia, and Nigeria. So the capex that we show you is tangible capex. The intangible capex, which is normally very bulky in nature, is kept outside the normal metrics. So 40% of that has gone over there. Also, about 20% of that free cash flow was used for certain working capital clearances and payables, which were showing positive working capital movement last year, was settled this year across the group. And the balance 20% is the dividend payments that were paid out, including the one which we paid in Qatar and minority leakage. So there is some cash flow available after that. And you're right, the overall trajectory going forward with improving EBITDA and with some of the intangible spend behind us should be there. Priority at a group level is to deleverage a little further. And of course, if net profits are there and cash flow is healthy, one would proactively look at dividend as well.
Just a follow up on your first answer. So the 3.36 billion is at all at OPCO levels, but are they going to repay that or refinance? I didn't understand.
I think there's a combination of both. The last part is likely to be refinanced there.
Okay.
There's no one big big amount. There are small amounts spread across that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. We will now go to our next question from Hassan Abdelghalil from CI Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you, but my question has already been asked, so it's already answered. I'm fine.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question now from Dilya Ibragimova from Citigroup.
Hi, I actually have two, please. First is on Iraq, the restricted cash balances. Could you update us how much cash is on restricted accounts at the end of the year, and what is your outlook? I think the financial statements say in the notes that you're working with the banks, so do you expect a whole of that amount to be released or portion of that? And also, does that mean that you will be getting dividends potentially out of the country? And the second one is on Asia Internet Holding, your JV with Rocket. Could you, it seems like you've done the write down this year. Is that because the performance on investments is below your expectations? And maybe you can give us a bit more insight on that JV, whether there are some assets that potentially could be monetized, and what's the timeline for that? Thank you.
As far as Iraq cash is concerned, the restricted cash is related to cash which is earmarked for certain payments to the regulator based on a regulatory instruction. It's related to certain disputed amounts which are being contested where we have a favorable court decision. As far as, and that's separate from the cash upstreaming that we need to do. The cash upstreaming for us, like we mentioned earlier, also it's in the range of $500 million plus. And that is a function really of the documentation requirements and the availability of foreign currency to repatriate that. I think it will take a little bit of time given the political situation of the country, but we are actively working to make sure all the requirements to repatriate are being fulfilled, and eventually I think once the economic stability returns to the country, we do expect that things will improve in terms of upstreaming.
What is the balance at the year end that is restricted? Is it 170 or has it been increased?
I forget that last time. I think let me offline tell you the exact amount for this.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Probably in the range of 170, but let me reconfirm that to you offline.
Thank you.
As far as the AH is concerned, we've taken some impairments. So these are not impairments on a total investment. These are done based on individual investments. As you can imagine, that we have multiple small investments in different countries. So each one of that is assessed on an individual basis. And depending on the success and the assessed value of that individual investment, impairments are taken. Hans is more actively involved with Rocket. Maybe you want to give it more flavor to this.
Yes, and I think I would say that it's not a result of business failures. The majority of it is where the plan is stretching out a little bit further into the future. These have all been greenfield startup companies, so we're in the process of developing. This follows the normal sort of development cycle for these sort of businesses. It's multi-year to get it to a sustainable EBITDA free cash flow generating level. We're probably only about a quarter or a third of the way through the life cycle of most of these businesses, so still some way to go to get them to fully mature development. And there are about 15 in the portfolio. We've got a range of businesses, and we've got some businesses that we feel I'm quite excited about, because it's still very early days for them in terms of bringing them to a mature conclusion. So you know, it's something that we'll continue to work on and develop.
And from the time of maturity, is it about 5 years or 5-10 years?
Sorry, in total or together, did you say?
Is it more like private equity type of investment or is it venture capital type of investment? So it takes longer. Venture capital is, I think, the time frame for...
It's more venture capital. The projects themselves are more like a venture capital type of field. So they're greenfield startups. And we're now, you know, somewhere between 2-2.5 years through the ones that are sort of, you know, first started, perhaps 3, and, you know, which is typically 5+ years before you see the thing come to maturity.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We now have a question from Zayed Itani from Arkham Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. Actually, just a few questions. The S&P upgraded Ooredoo's outlook to positive in January 2017. Will this impact your interest costs? Second, how much of Maldives you would be floating on the market and what's the timeline? And can we expect to see a small one-off dividend from Ooredoo Kuwait? On Oman, there's talks of a tender going for a third operator to enter the market. How will this change the dynamics, and when can we expect an update? And lastly, on data growth, we can notice that it's not being properly translated to a strong revenue growth. So the question is, where's the difficulty in monetizing data coming from, which market specifically? Did you manage, for example, to raise prices in Indonesia? Thank you.
Okay, as far as the S&P outlook growth is concerned, we don't expect any impact of that on our interest cost. In any case, we don't have any refinancings due until December of 2018. So no real impact as we speak. Maldives IPO, the announcement was made. We'll be giving more details of the timing of that in due course. Generally, a minimum 10% is to be placed as per the IPO requirements there. So that is what we intend to do, but more details of this as we proceed with the IPO. Oman third license, maybe hand in.
Yes. We don't have, obviously, clarity yet. The process hasn't completed. And then, you know, once the process is completed, there's a normal time it takes for the selected party to get into operations, to build the network and to launch. So, obviously, we're watching that, and we are doing the necessary to enhance our own business in preparation for that. But you know, our expectations are this is still a little way to go before a third operator is in the market and fully operational.
And as far as the data revenue growth is concerned, I think that is something which the whole industry across the board is challenged by. Most of the markets, the data yields are generally on a declining trend. That's something we factor in our business plans as well. Any positive movement on data pricing will be a positive for the whole industry in a specific country. But we haven't seen any major movements as of now. We do sometimes have short-term positive movements in some markets. But a long-term trend of decline is what we see so far.
Okay, thank you. Just following up, actually, on the guidance for CapEx specifically, there's close to a $1 billion reduction in the planned CapEx expenditure. So where is this coming from?
The reduction is compared to the guidance we gave you, but if you look at the actual spend, it is close to that.
Yeah, so in terms of actuals, you do not expect a major change, but versus your previous business plan, there is a $1 billion reduction. So, no clarity.
That's a factor, like you said, of good work done at group sourcing level, and also making sure the rollouts are tightly linked to the requirements of the business as well.
Okay, thank you.
Just at one point with regards to the Maldives, all the information which is in the public domain so far has been summarized on slide 27 in the presentation.
Thank you. We'll now go to our next question from Sandeep Bhatt from Deco Invest. And please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. A couple of questions on Algeria, Iraq, and Myanmar. On Iraq, if you could give us some color on what's happening on the regulatory side, on the competition side, given that, you know, the situation is improving on the, you know, war front. How do you see that as a growth perspective from 2 years point of view? How's the data growth? How's the, you know, the new licenses? I'm hearing about it. So could you give us some more perspective on that? Similarly, the same thing on Myanmar, how you see the, you know, the growth and data, you know, evolve. And on Algeria, do you have any issues on repatriating money from there? Thank you.
As far as Iraq is concerned, it's a complex situation there. It's a combination, of course, of the political situation, economic condition, as well as the competitive dynamics. So there's intense competitive dynamics there between the operators. As far as the political situation is concerned, some improvement as far as certain areas are concerned, where equipment is coming back to be switched on, but it'll take some time. So if you talk about midterm view and not just 1 year, we do expect positive results from the areas where services will be sort of relaunched. But as far as the economic condition and the competitive dynamics are concerned, that clarity is still not there because the government is still, of course, invested heavily in a lot of activities, and the oil price implication on Iraq also is significant. So those two dynamics, we'll have to see how it goes. But definitely from the perspective of more areas having service, that'll have a positive impact and in the midterm. Myanmar, of course, has been a growth story so far, but the growth percentage is on a declining trend. Competition is intense in Myanmar as well. Fourth operator expected to launch sometime in second half of the coming year. So still growth in the market, but not as much as what we've seen in the last 2 years. In Algeria, we've repatriated in the past, repaid our shareholder loans and also dividends. So in the past, we've done that, and we hope in the future also we'll be able to do that.
So in, if I may just follow up on Iraq, there are no new players, there is no new license.
All the talk of a fourth operator some time back, but we haven't seen or heard any update on that hand.
No, I have nothing that I'm aware of yet.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now go to our next question from Hoda Bostanji from Global Data. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you for the opportunity. Well, my question is really related to the OIDU footprint countries where you're not the incumbent operator. And what I wanted to know is that will the B2B segment still be a major area of focus for you in 2017 in these countries? What will be your main service priorities, vertical priorities, and also would your strategy include a more accelerated fiber rollout in these countries? Thank you.
Yes, so I can confirm that B2B is definitely a very important part of our business strategy going forward in almost all of our opcos, be they sort of incumbent Qatar or elsewhere. And the degree of sophistication really varies market by market. And clearly in markets where we have a fixed presence, like Qatar and Indonesia, where we do have fiber, we're able to offer, you know, a much more comprehensive suite of services to our customers, and those are really moving those forward into adjacencies and some ICT capabilities is very much part of the strategy. In other markets where we are predominantly a mobile player, it's more about offering a very good mobile B2B service with selectively adding on broadband access where we can. Fiber is obviously, as a greenfield investment, a large project in itself. We're not proposing to roll out fiber absolutely everywhere, but selectively where we think there's a good business case, market by market.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Talal Al-Kamas from NBK Capital has our next question. Please go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen, for the call. Just have a few questions. First, regarding RAG, any risk of, or if you can shed some light on the Korek, the government of Iraq taking Korek from Agility, and what is the risk, if any, towards that to Ooredoo? And second, regarding Kuwait, with the acquiring of the ISP, Fastelco, what is the progress on doing bundling services, any sort of direction towards that? Thank you.
With regard to the first question, can you please clarify once more, Korek and the Iraqi government?
Yeah, so Korek, it was a telecom operator. It was owned by Agility Group, and the Iraqi government just seized their assets. So there wasn't any explanations on what is the reason behind that. So that's the first thing that we saw in the market. Is there a possibility of more asset capturing by the assets being taken over by the government?
Okay, we really don't know the reason for why that action that has been taken by the government. We also know what's in the public domain. We'll have to wait and see how that story unfolds to really understand the logic for that. We can't comment beyond that actually for the Iraq issue. As far as the Kuwait issue is concerned, I don't think the company can bundle the products together. But they are, of course, working to offer services to their own customers on a separate basis, which is linked to ISP services and fixed line services.
Okay. And for Kuwait, the ISP?
Link is not possible, I believe, in the market. But, of course, they're servicing the client on a standalone basis and making sure their fixed services needs are satisfied.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. We now have a question from Walid Belhala from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm sorry if my question was already answered, but just regarding the IPO plan for the Maldives, just wanted to know whether you can give us any ballpark number of what would you expect in terms of proceeds, and how much do you expect to sell in the stock market as a percentage of the holdings, as well as what do you plan to do with the cash proceeds?
I think it's early days to give you more details about the valuation and things like that. Eventually, I think once an IPO is launched, I think we'll get more flavor of that. Like you said, the slide number 27, I can give you details of the IPO which is in public domain. For the rest, I think we'll have to wait and see how things progress. As far as the cash is concerned, it will not be, looking at the size of Maldives, so significant in the overall context of the group. However, of course, cash is available and it's upstreamed. It will follow an upstreaming process at the appropriate time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone. We have a question now from Sito Raharsan from IFC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I just have a follow-up question on Myanmar. And actually, Viettel is, so you indicated, is entering the market. And if I understand, there will be rolling out 3G, 4G. And I would like to have your insight on what's going to be your sort of rollout strategy or change in marketing strategy to sort of address the entry of this of Viettel.
Well, it's a bit difficult for me to answer that over an open line. Clearly, we'll have a welcoming party for them, but in terms of any more detail, I'm not sure I can say that now.
Hello?
Yes? Hello?
Yes. Sorry, I didn't hear what you said. Sorry.
Okay. In terms of responding to Viettel, obviously for commercial reasons, I can't say too much about that on this call. But suffice it to say, we'll prepare a welcoming party for them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now go to our next question from Zayed Hawari from QIC. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. I just have a quick follow-up regarding the Maldives. In the segment's information in the financials, there is others, and under that, there is the Maldives. How much from the segment assets in that note is Maldives presenting?
No, I find that out as a percentage for you, but I think if you look at NMCC financials, have some more details. I'm just guessing maybe.
Yeah, the NMCC financials going to be available within 9 or 10 working days on the NMCC website. They're not published yet. They only have the press release out so far, but there should be some more details in that one too.
So that will probably get you more details on Maldives.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. As a final reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question at this time you would like to ask, please press star 1 on your telephone. We have a follow-up question now from Karim Riyad from EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Hi, just a follow-up question. I didn't really get what will the cash proceeds from the IPO in Maldives be used for. Can you please say that again?
The Maldives IPO is not a primary IPO. It will be a secondary IPO. That means it's not funds required for the business. So depending on the need to upstream that cash, it will be upstreamed at the appropriate time. Because we can give you more details of this only after the IPO is out there and successful, then we can probably share more details on the plans for the proceeds at that stage.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. As we have no further questions, I'd like to turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Great. Thank you very much, operator, and thank you all for joining today's call. Please refer to the Ooredoo Investor Relations website for additional updates. Follow us on Twitter at OoredooIR or feel free to contact the Investor Relations team for any further information. We look forward to your future participation in our next update, probably around April 26th. Meanwhile, thank you again for your continued interest in Ooredoo.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.